Says the Gemara, Le David unto David, in the 86th Psalm, which begins with the words Tfilah Le David, a prayer of David, King David prayed and uttered the following words, Shomro nafshi ki chosidoni, preserve my soul, for I am very pious. Levi Verab Yitzchok, in interpreting this verse and explaining David's reason for referring to himself as very pious, we find a difference of opinion between two sages, Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak. Chadomar, one sage said, Kachomar David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So said David in his prayer to the Almighty, Riboyinu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Loi Chosidani, should I not be considered pious? Shekol Malchim Mizrach Umayrov, for all the kings of the East and West, Yeshenim Ad Sholesh Shoyes, prolong their sleep until the third hour of the day. Vani, whereas I, Chatzois Laila Okum Lohirislach, at midnight do I already rise to offer thanks unto thee. Veidoch, and the second sage explains that Kacho Mal David Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So said David in his prayer to the Almighty, Riboyinu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Loi Chosidani, should I not be considered pious? Shekol Malchim Mizrach Umayrov, Yoishvim Agudes Agudes Bikvoidom, for all the kings of the East and West sit in their respective royal circles in all their glory. Vani, whereas I, Yodai Muluch Loches, my hands are soiled, Vedam Ubishafir Ubishilyo, in examining these charges of menstrual blood and various types of miscarriages, Kedei Letayer Isho Lebailo, in order to ascertain the status of purity of a woman to her husband. Veloit, and what is more, Elokol Mashani Eise, in all that I do, that is, in every decision of law that I render, Aninim Lo B'Mifiboshes Rabbi, I seek the authoritative opinion of Mephibosheth, my teacher. Veomale, saying to him, Mephibosheth, Rabbi, Mephibosheth, my teacher, Yofedanti, was the decision of Halacha that I rendered a correct one? Yofechiyati, did I correctly convict or find liable? Yofezachisi, did I correctly acquit or absolve from liability? Yofetiharti, did I correctly declare ritually clean? Yofetimesi, did I correctly declare ritually impure? Vele Boshti, I asked all these questions and was not ashamed that people would gain the impression that there are greater authorities on Jewish law than I, the king. Omar Rabbi Yeshua Breda Ravidi, said Rabbi Yeshua the son of Ravidi, Meikro, from which words do we learn that David consulted Mephibosheth and was not ashamed? From the 46th verse of the 119th Psalm, wherein it says, Vadabro beidoi secho neged melochim v'levish, and I will discuss topics of thy law in the presence of kings, and I will not be ashamed. Tana, we learned in a beraisa, lo Mephibosheth shmo, his name was not really Mephibosheth, elo Ishbaal shmo, but rather his real name was Ishbaal. He was the son of Saul, the first Jewish king. If so, why was he referred to as Mephibosheth? The answer is based on the Hebrew meaning of the words Mipi, which means from the mouth, and Boshes, which means humiliation, denoting that Ishbaal occasionally caused humiliation to David in matters of halacha. For when David sought his teacher's authoritative opinion, Ishbaal did not hesitate to correct publicly a mistaken decision of David. Lefichor, therefore, because of David's trait of extraordinary humility, Zocho David, David was rewarded the Yotzim Imenu Kilov, and a son Kilov was born to him. The Yomar Rabbi Yochanan, of whom Rabbi Yochanan said, Lo Kilov Shmei, his real name was not Kilov, Elo Daniel Shmei, but rather his name was Daniel, son of Avigail, as he is referred to in other verses in Tanakh. If so, why is he referred to as Kiloth? Again, the answer is based on the Hebrew meaning of the name, which is embarrasses the teacher. Shoyamachlim pnei Mephibosheth b'halacha. For the Neo embarrassed his father's teacher Mephibosheth in matters of halacha. Ve'olava mashlema v'chachmasi. And it was concerning the Neo that Shlomo said in his wisdom, the verse in Proverbs chapter 23, Bni my son, im chocham libecha, if thy heart be wise, yismach libi gamoni, my heart too will rejoice. They omer, and in another verse, in chapter 27 of Proverbs, King Solomon again referred to Daniel when he said, Chacham bni, be wise, my son, they samach libi, and cause my heart to rejoice. Ve'yashiva choyl fidogo, and I will answer in kind him who humiliated me, meaning that Kilav upheld the decisions of law rendered by his father by answering all the questions raised at the time by Mephibosheth in contradiction to these decisions. Before proceeding further, let us return and analyze the portion of the Talmud we have just learned. First, one may ask, why could Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak find no basis for David's claim to piety other than his rising at midnight or his sitting in judgment? Secondly, why was his piety evaluated only in comparison to other kings, that other rulers slept while he studied Torah and that other rulers sat in royal splendor while he passed judgment? Was David not pious in his own right, but only in contrast to other rulers? We know from Tanakh that David HaMelech was Israel's greatest king and one of its greatest prophets and scholars. Surely there were many other acts of piety which he performed other than the two mentioned, which marked him as a chassid. Why then were these two singled out? Finally, we may wonder at David's reference to himself as a pious man. Modesty, as we know, is a prerequisite for piety, and one who is really pious never recognizes himself as such, let alone make declarations of piety. How then could David make the statement that he was very pious? The answer to these questions lies in the fact that David was required by law to preserve the dignity of the monarchy. Unlike the scholar who may forgo the honor which is his due, the king may not overlook any breach in the honor according to him as king. For the honor is not his as an individual, but for the crown. Since Hasidus denotes an act on the part of the person which goes above and beyond the requirements of the din, one might think that the king is forbidden to perform such an act of piety if it results in an apparent lack of proper respect for the crown. David HaMelech, in his private life, displayed greatness in virtue, and with the humility proper to his piety, he was not cognizant of his virtues. As a king, however, he was aware of the universally accepted protocol of royal courts, and thus he was cognizant of the fact that he had to forego some aspects of it, such as resting late and sitting in regal splendor. For the sake of study of the Torah, he was the first to awaken, and in order to ascertain a woman's status of purity, he had to soil his hands rather than indulge in royal pomp. King David, in comparing himself to other kings, emphasized that it was not lack of respect for the monarchy which motivated his actions. Rather, he was guided by the awareness that the crown's greatest honor is that its foundation is Hasidus, piety. And as the founder of Judaism's eternal dynasty, he imparted this knowledge to all future kings that they are most honored when piety, rather than glory or splendor, is the source of honor for the king. To show that King David was motivated by the highest of ideals, rather than proclaiming his high degree of piety, the Gemara mentions that in all David did, regarding decisions of law, he consulted Mephibosheth, thus teaching us that King David's goal was to arrive at a correct decision, regardless of the impression it might cause that the king must consult a commoner. This act of humility shows that it was not a boast, but rather the ideal of pious monarchy which motivated David's statement. Questions the Gemara. Did David mikol nafshei chosid? Did David consider himself to be a chosid? Behoksiv, it is written in the 27th Psalm, verse 13, Lulei hemanti, if not for my strong belief during the time of my exile, Lirois bituvashem, that I would see the reward of the Almighty, Beretz Chaim, in the land of eternal life, I would have been lost in the hands of my oppressors. If we examine the Hebrew text of the Psalms, we find that the word lulei, meaning if not, is marked with dots. These dots, whenever they appear in Tanakh, always indicate a concealed second meaning expressed by the words which bear the markings. Veitona mishmede Rabbi Yossi, and we learn in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Lomo nokuda lulei, what is the meaning of the marks on the word lulei? Omar David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what David said to the Holy One, blessed be He, Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Muftach ani b'cho, my faith in You assures me, Shato mishalim socho tevla tzadikim lasid lovei, that You pay a good reward to the righteous in the world to come. Avol eini yedea, but I know not, im yesh li chedek b'nei mimlav, whether or not I have a share among the righteous. This second interpretation of the verse, which to a certain extent contradicts the literal interpretation, is indicated by the dots. We thus see that David was doubtful whether his kingdom was righteous. How then could he make the statement, Ki chosidani, for I am pious? Answers the Gemara. David was aware that his monarchy was based on piety, but he expressed doubt about his share in the rewards of the world to come, Shemo yigrom machet, because no person can vouch for the future. And he was fearful that he might commit sins unintentionally, and those sins would cause him to lose his share in the rewards of the world to come. As we find that a similar answer was given by Rabbi Yaakov, the son of Idi, in resolving an apparent contradiction between two verses, the Rabbi Yaakov Baridi Rami, for Rabbi Yaakov Baridi question, Ksiv, it is written in Genesis, chapter 28, verse 15, that when Yaakov was running away from his brother Esau, the Almighty said to him, Vehinei onoichi imoch, and I am with thee, ushmarticho bechol asher telech, and I will guard thee wherever thou goest. Yet, despite this heavenly assurance, we find that when Yaakov was finally about to meet Esau, that he was afraid, uksiv, as it is written in Genesis, chapter 32, verse 8, Vayiro Yaakov meot, and Yaakov was very frightened. Rabbi Yaakov Baridi resolved this contradiction, explaining that Yaakov's fear was because Omar, he said to himself, Shema yigrom achet, it may be that subsequent sins have caused the promise to be invalidated, and that sins can cause a promise to be invalidated. Kidisanyo, we learned in Eberaiso, explaining the verse in Exodus chapter 15, verse 16. This verse, which is part of the prophetic song said by Moshe and the Jewish nation after crossing the Red Sea and foretelling the Jewish future, states that a fear would befall on all nations. Ad yavor amcha Hashem, until thy people pass over, O Lord. Ad yavor amzukoniso, until the people pass over, the people thou hast gotten. The Brice explains the repetition of the words, till thy people pass over, as referring to two separate historic events. Ad yavor amcha Hashem, until thy people pass over, O Lord, Zubiyo Rishoino, This refers to the first time the Jewish nation entered Eretz Israel under the leadership of Yehoshua, while the second portion of the verse, Ad Yavor Amzukaniso, Zubiyoshnio, refers to the Jewish second entrance into Eretz Israel under the leadership of Ezra, following the Babylonian exile. Mikan Omru Chachomim, from this interpretation, the sages stated that Reuim Hoyi Israel, the Jews were intended, Laos Islahem Nezbe Me Ezra, that a miracle be performed for them in Ezra's time, Kederach Shanasolem Nes Bime Yehoshua Benun, just as a miracle was performed for them in the time of Yehoshua Benun. In other words, just as the Jews entered Eretz Israel by miracle, with fear befalling the surrounding nations in the day of Yehoshua, so too were they promised they would enter in Ezra's day. Elo Shegoro Machet, but the sins committed by the Jewish nation caused this promise to be revoked, and instead of returning to Eretz Israel independently, with no fear for the surrounding nations, they entered only by permission of Koresh or Cyrus, king of the Persians. They were subjected to Persia and were forced to pledge allegiance to the Persian crown of Koresh, Ahasuerush, and Dariovash the Last. This promise will be fulfilled when the final redemption of the Jewish people will take place. The Gemara now returns to analyze and interpret the Mishnah. Quotes the Gemara. We learned in the Mishnah, V'hachomim omrim ad chatzos. The other sages say that the final time for reading the evening Shema is at midnight. Questions the Gemara. Chachomim keman svirlo. With whose interpretation do the sages agree? We learned previously that Rabbi Eliezer interprets the verse B'shalbacha, when thou liest down, from which we learn the obligation to read the Shema in the evening, as meaning when most people prepare to retire, which is during the first 4 hours of the night. Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, fixes the final time for reciting the Shema at the end of the first watch, which is 4 hours after nightfall. Rabbi Gamliel, on the other hand, interprets B'shalbacha, when thou liest down, to mean when people have already retired. He therefore says that the time to recite the Shema extends through the entire night. The Gemara now questions the underlying reason of the other sages in compromising between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel and setting the time at midnight. Ik Rabbi Eliezer svir elohu, if they interpret B'shalbacha like Rabbi Eliezer, meaning when people prepare to retire, Lameruk Rabbi Eliezer, let them fix the same time as Rabbi Eliezer does, the first third of the night. Vik Rabbi Gamliel svir elohu, and if they concur with Rabbi Gamliel and interpret B'shalbacha to mean when people have retired, Lameruk Rabbi Gamliel, let them fix the same time as Rabbi Gamliel, which is the break of dawn. And so the Gemara, Lo'oilom ki Rabbi Gamliel svir elohu. Actually, the sages agree with Rabbi Gamliel's interpretation of when thou liest down, as meaning the entire night. V'hodiko amri ad chatzos, and the reason they limit the reading of the Shema to midnight is for a precautionary measure. K'dei lahachik es odo min aveiro, to remove the possibility of a person's unintentionally committing a sin. K'dei sanyo, as we learned in a beraisa, Chachomim osu siogli divrei. Our sages erected a figurative fence around the regulations. Kedei, in order that shalei odom bo min asod ha'erev, a man should not come from the field in the evening, ve'yomer, and say to himself, Eilech lebeisi, I will go home for a while, ve'yoechol kima, and I will eat a little, ve'eshte kima, and I will drink a little, ve'isham kima, and I will sleep a little, Vachakach, and after I have eaten, drunk, and slept a little, Ekro Kriyashma Vespale, I will then read the Shema and daven the Shmoneh Esre. Vechit Foseis Sheino, for meanwhile, sleep may overpower him, Venimtso Yoshin Kol HaLaila, and he may find himself sleeping the entire night. Thus, unintentionally committing the sin of not reading the evening Shema and adopting the Shmoneh Esreh. Aval, but with the time restricted to midnight, Odom Bomina Soda Boerat, a person, when coming from the field in the evening, realizes that his time is limited, and Nichnas LeBeis HaKnesses, he enters the shul instead. Imrogi Likros Kore, if he is capable of learning Torah, he learns it. Imrogi Lishnois Shoine, and if he is more learned and capable of understanding the Mishneh or Gemara, he learns Mishneh or Gemara. Vekore Kriya Shema Mispalet, and he reads the Shema and davens Shmoneh Esrei. Vayochel Pitei, and only then does he go home and eat his bread, Umevorech, after which he says Birchas Hamazon, the four blessings said after each meal. Vechol Ha'iver Al Divrei Chachamim, and he who violates the regulations established by our sages, Chayev Miso, is deserving of heavenly capital punishment. Questions the Gemara. Maishnei, why is this case different from other cases where the sages established regulations? Behold, Duchto, in all other places, Loikotoni Chayev Misa, it is not stated that the violator is deserving of heavenly capital punishment. Umaishnei Hoho, why then is this case unique, Dikotoni Chayev Misa, in that deserving such severe punishment is mentioned? Answers the Gemara. There are two reasons why severe punishment is mentioned here. Iboy Yiseima, if you wish, I can say that the reason is Mishum Deiko Oines Sheino, because there is a danger of accidental sleep which may overpower him. Since the cause of his violation is accidental, it calls for a stronger warning, which is why the Braise found it necessary to sound this warning, in order that he not lull himself into sleep without fulfilling the mitzvah of reading the Shema and davening Maariv. Ve'iboy yiseime, and if you wish, I can say another reason. La'afukim imandu omar k'filas alvis reshus. The strong warning here was necessary to dispel the opinion of one who says that the Shmoneh Esreh of the evening is voluntary. K'mashmalon, by voicing this warning, our sages taught us, dechayva, that the evening Shmoneh Esreh is obligatory, just as the Shmoneh Esreh of Shachris and the Shmoneh Esreh of Minche. We note that the Baraise, in explaining the sage's reason for restricting the reading of the Shema until midnight, states that it was the desire of the sages that when a person returns from the field in the evening, he should enter the shul and learn portions of Tanakh or the Talmud prior to davening. One may ask, why was study of the Torah injected in explaining the time limit of the evening Shema? The answer is that the prayer of Shmoneh Esreh must be preceded by words of Torah. As the Talmud states, one should not begin prayer unless it is preceded by learning words of Torah. Of the three daily prayers, Shachris is preceded by chapters from Tanakh, mainly from the Psalms, known as Psukei Dezimra. Mincha Tu is begun by saying Ashrei, which as a chapter in Psalms is considered words of Torah. In the evening prayer, however, it was left to the individual to select words of Torah to study before praying. That is why the Braise mentions Imrogi Likros Kore, if he is capable of learning the Torah, he learns it, Imrogi Lishnois Shoinen, and if he is capable of understanding the Mishneh or Talmud, he learns Mishneh or Talmud.